Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Thanks for joining us on Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Grant Kruger, and I'm very excited to be here with you this morning. It is a wonderful Wednesday morning, heating up this week in Tucson as it starts to dry up with that monsoon season going away over here as we roll into the month of September. As we've talked about before on Jump in Tucson, September actually happens to be one of the slowest months, if not the slowest month, in the restaurant business, right? Like this one, by its nature, has just a lot of things not going for it. The students have returned, but school has gotten serious. The snowbirds haven't made their way back yet because it's still pretty hot. And every single Saturday, there's a U of A home game, which is just absolutely rocking Tucson. And it was an amazing, amazing show to see the Cats come out in a real heart attack of a game this Saturday and pull one out there in the second half and score an awful lot of points. And while certainly we're very excited for them, if you're not on university, it's not going to be quite as busy for you. In fact, this Saturday was probably, for our business, the slowest Saturday of the entire calendar year. My guest coming up later on the show, it's going to be one of the busiest Saturdays of the whole year because we're going to bring on Rich Pfeiffer, owner of Gentle Ben's Brewing Company, Bossio Italian, and Agave House. But first, a little food for thought. This week, I happened to notice that the city of Tucson was looking at referring a sales tax increase in the month of March. We were talking about on Wake Up Tucson just before referrals and ways to get things to the voters. And it's very interesting to me to see this half cent sales tax start to pop up potentially for the city of Tucson. This would make not just restaurants more expensive, but absolutely everything you buy. For example, already in Pima County, right, the state of Arizona, sales tax is 5.6%. The RTA tax, the extra half cent for roads, bumps that to 6.1%. And so for my restaurants that are located in Pima County, that sales tax is 6.1. If the city of Tucson had their way, they would take their already 2.6% sales tax and add another half cent to it, turning it to 3.1%. And while I'm sorry for all the math out there for my listeners, that essentially would take the sales tax in the city of Tucson to 9.2%. Right? Nearly 10%. 6.1% in the county, 9.2% in the city. Those that are keeping score at home, that's 50% more taxes. That's not small. That's not insignificant. When you think about, hey, where am I going to open my business? Where am I going to do things? Am I going to be on this side of the county line or on that side of the county line? 50% higher taxes is absolutely something that is out there that sticks in my mind as something that could be incredibly dangerous. On top of that, we've got another referral coming up for the RTA next, that half a cent sales tax in the year of 2025 is going to need a vote as well too to continue. So our voters in Pima County are going to be staring at two elections, most likely done in off election season, like not in November, and oftentimes not even on a primary time either, because the entities that are behind these tax increases kind of want to slip it past the goalie when no one's looking and do those sort of elections in the off months. And right now, the city of Tucson is looking at doing this election in March. Another half cent. It seems so insignificant, but making the taxes 50% more expensive for the city of Tucson is going to be a major setback for economic development, an area that already suffers demonstrably from lack of enforcement of municipal laws, a city government that's already behind the eight ball financially because, quite frankly, we're giving away free bus at the cost of nearly $1 million a month to our citizens. Nothing in life is free, right? The free chips and salsa at your Mexican restaurant are not free. This costs money. Go to the supermarket and find out how much they'll charge you for chips and salsa. Bus is not free. Gas or electricity or maintenance or employees, none of those things are free. It's baked into the cost somewhere. You're paying for it. And so to me, looking at the city of Tucson running an additional nearly $12 million deficit for free busing, the idea that we would raise our taxes another half cent on all of our citizens in an area where we've, in a world where we've already had this much inflation, this much cost increase, is absolutely terrifying. There was a study done last week by a group called RMS where 75% of American citizens said right now that restaurants are quote unquote too expensive, right? And another 39% of those respondents said they were expensive almost to the extreme because we're staring down the barrel of rising labor cost, rising product cost, and now you're going to raise taxes even more in the city of Tucson. This does not seem to be the route for proper economic development to me, all things being equal. But as we continue to talk about the city of Tucson, we fail to recognize so many of the things that we could do better, right? I was coming down First Avenue on my way down the street today, and I get to see just the absolute devastation that happens at our bus stops and at our crosswalks. I've said it over and over on this show that First and Fort Lowell is the new Grant and Alvernon, and this is so true. Like, this area of Tucson right now is so downtrodden that it pains me to see it, to even drive down here. And I recognize that maybe this is some sort of position of privilege to say that I come from my home north of River Road and make my way down into Midtown. But quite frankly, it breaks my heart. And to think that our government deserves an extra half cent, 50% more than unincorporated Pima County for the work that they're already doing, to me, just doesn't make any sense. And so I want you guys to be on your tiptoes and keep your ears open for this sort of thing when this election pops up in March, because it's a sneaky one. This is done on purpose so that it's not going to be during a popular gubernatorial election or presidential election or Senate race where somebody's going to pay a lot of attention. This one's going to happen in the off season, and hope that you, my listener friends, are not paying attention. So when we come back after the break, I've got an amazing guest coming up. I'm going to bring in a guy that's an awful lot like me, a guy who's got a new American pub concept. He's got a Mexican concept. He's got an Italian concept, all in the same general shopping area. There aren't too many guys crazy like that like me, but I've got one staring across me from the studio right over here. When we come back after the break, we're going to be talking to Rich Pfeiffer of Gentle Ben's Brewing Company, talking some Gentle Ben's history, all kinds of fun things about restaurants on University Avenue. Wear your dark shades, enjoy the views. We're talking University Avenue new restaurants when we come back after the break on Jump in Tucson. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. Thank you so much for spending your Wednesday morning with us. I am your host, Grant Kruger, and live in studio this morning, we've got Rich Pfeiffer, owner of Gentle Ben's, Basio Italian, and Agave House. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning, Grant. Thank you for having me.
No, thanks for coming out. I was really excited to get you on the show this morning because there aren't a lot of guys crazy enough like myself to have three restaurants in the same shopping center. And I thought maybe we could talk about that and those challenges and maybe some of the challenges of operating on University Boulevard as well, too. But if we could tear into your start in the restaurant and hospitality business, I think it'd be an amazing intro.
Yeah, I can't say that it was intentional or on purpose. I after high school, I grew up in Tucson, and then I joined the Marine Corps, did that for 5 years. I loved it. I got out, used a GI Bill to go to school at the U of A, was having a good time. My intentions were to go back in the Marine Corps. So I was just looking for a fun job, and Gentle Ben's was the job. I walked in and I applied to be a bartender with zero restaurant experience, and you know how that goes.
Became a barback.
Yep, I started busing and barbacking, and I did that for a while, and I got into some of the marketing and then into bartending and serving, and it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed the people. I enjoyed the chaos, the controlled chaos. I enjoyed the challenges. And then at one point, you know, I graduated from the U of A, I had a flight contract, and then I tore my ACL. Marine Corps doesn't like that so much. So when that happened, I went through a rehab and reapplied, and at the time the Marine Corps was downsizing and that wasn't an option anymore. And so I kind of had to figure out what my next step was going to be. And so then the easiest and the thing that made the most sense to me was continue in management. And so I approached the previous owners, Tana and Dennis Arnold, about becoming the GM. They loved the idea. So I did that for a while. They gave me a small equity stake, a little sweat equity, and did that for a while. And then they did it for 25 years and they wanted out. So they came to me and they said, "Do you know anyone who wants to buy Gentle Ben's?" I put my hand up. I said, "I do." And at the time, I had no idea how I was going to do it. But I was able to figure it out with the help of some family and alone. And here we are. Yeah, my brother-in-law, Russ Moore, and his wife, Jennifer Troish, basically invested in me.
That's amazing. And it's one of the neatest things I think about the restaurant business, Rich, is how we can literally start from the absolute bottom, right? Like, here's yet another story. This is our third week in a row of stories on Jump in Tucson, where we've had people starting as an hourly employee and ending up owning the business. How many other industries, how many other countries do we have that this can happen for you? And it's, I think, one of the amazing entrepreneurial, you know, essences of the restaurant business. And I'm just so excited that you got this opportunity. I understand that you, at a fun little factoid over here, used to bartend with my wife over at Gentle Ben's as well, too, back in the day.
That's true. We had a lot of fun. It's definitely different back then. You know, it feels like a decade ago. Probably was a decade ago or more. But she was a lot of fun to work with.
No stories over there. This is public radio, you know. Like, but ultimately, what a great story that you got to start off with this. Can we talk a little bit about Gentle Ben's history? Mm-hmm. This happens to be pretty much the oldest brewery in some capacity in Tucson, opening up in, I believe, 1971.
Yep, I was not around then. Started in 1971. Didn't start brewing until 1991 when Tana and Dennis bought the business. They were where the Marriott is now on 2nd and Tyndall originally. Just a small old house, multiple stories. And then the Marriott came in and they wanted to build there, which was, you know, perfect for university. It's been what has helped the growth there. And so as a part of the lease, the Marsh Foundation had to move Gentle Ben's into a different location where we are now, which is perfect. It's on university. It's right in the heart of everything. And it's a huge building compared to what it was before and more functional. And so they moved all the brewing over to the new Gentle Ben's location. In the mid-90s, in 96, and then they opened up Barrio Brewing in 2006. And so at that point, they moved all the brewing equipment over to Barrio, huge Quonset hut, lots of space, and they could expand their brewing.
Well, without a doubt, the brewing equipment sitting in high-dollar retail doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. In the 1990s, when I started in the Tucson restaurant business, right, I was working for Breckenridge Brewery at the time, there was only a few breweries in Tucson, right? There was Gentle Ben's. Nimbus was in its infancy at that point, run by Nimbus Cousins in the pre-Jim Counts era even. There was Push Ridge Brewing Company. La Paloma opened up a ill-fated little one called Habanero's at some point. But Gentle Ben's was sort of the big dog at that point. But we learned our lessons at Breckenridge as well, too, that in the expensive rent areas, having a brew kettle, a mash tun, a pile of fermenters, like, was a great optical show, but not necessarily the best use of high-dollar real estate. So that must have been a really tremendous effort to pick up all that equipment and strip it out of the university location and move it to the Barrio location.
Yeah, I wasn't around at that time. I started busing in 2009. You know, I've seen the operation grow over at Barrio, and it's an amazing production.
So define to me the relationship between Gentle Ben's and Barrio Brewing now, because I understand they're separate entities at this point.
Yep. So I look at Tana, and Dennis as family, and things have changed since we bought it in 2017, but we still look at that relationship between Gentle Ben's and Barrio, as family. For the most part, we stick to Barrio beer on draft, with the exception of a couple local from Moto Sonora. But you know, there's no contracts, no legal ties between us anymore. Just a handshake, or really even a hug.
No, understood. And so what was like one company at some point has segmented off. Barrio, mm-hmm. I understand it has some degree of employee ownership at this point.
Yeah. So in 2017, they sold to me, an employee, and then I believe it was in 2019 or early 2020 when they sold to their employees in an ESOP, which I thought was, you know, really a great way to end their careers in the restaurants.
Well, Dennis was an amazing operator. He had that unique sort of combination of both mad scientist that you need to be a brewer, but also like a real scrappiness to him to be able to put together parts and pieces of equipment. You know, a guy that I truthfully really admired a lot in the restaurant business. How is it for you filling in those shoes after the fact? Is it tough following up a legend like that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, like you said, he's kind of just make things work and put things together. And I think that's what makes anyone successful in restaurants, because there's new challenges every day. And he had warehouses full of equipment to try to put things back together, which is interesting. But yeah, I mean, I learned a lot from both Tana and Dennis.
No, it's certainly tough to follow up great operators like that. I always worry about following up Chris DeSimone here in the morning, you know, a seasoned radio professional. And I think of other great restaurants and what's going to happen when the operator retires. You know, I talk to the Dan Scordatos of the world about a Vivace, and I think, who's going to follow up Dan over there, right? Like, no matter what, someone's going to say, the sauce isn't as good as when Danny used to make it.
Right? Yeah, but I think you could relate to this, but even as you grow and expand and you're spending less time and whatever your start was for you, Union, your personality kind of gets a little bit removed from it. And so for me, I think that's been one of my biggest challenges is trying to go back and make it exactly what I want without being there 80 hours a week, but then also doing the same thing in two other restaurants.
But you've had tremendous success, Rich, in the nightclub world of things, like that Gentle Ben's now is not just a pub for burgers and game day. Like, I mean, you're bringing in, you know, world-class level DJs and entertainment to a level that didn't exist when I was a kid going to Gentle Ben's in the 90s over there. Tell me about that.
Yeah, things have definitely changed even since I started working there. It's all about relationships.
So ultimately, like, what's the kind of cost to bring in like a high quality DJ like that? Is this something that's hundreds of dollars? Is it thousands of dollars? Like, how do you recuperate that?
It's thousands of dollars. And so this year we're actually doing, one of the biggest artists that we have done ourselves. A lot of the events we've done third parties to bring in artists with Relentless Beats. And so I think the biggest name we've had is Chris Lake. And next month we're doing Xandra, which is a TikTok famous girl who then became DJ. I had no idea who she was when they came to me, but she's going to be $15,000 for an hour.
Oh, wow. That's a big show for mm-hmm. sure. And that's the kind of budget that we use, you know, as a barometer for, say, the Maverick for us on the East Side. At some point, when you get into $15,000 or $20,000 or $25,000 for an artist, like, all the tickets in the world just don't make financial sense. You can't pay for that and recuperate those. Mm-hmm. And it starts to be almost like a loss leader for you, no?
Yeah. I think some of these events, a break-even point is even okay because of the branding that comes with it. So we had Rob Gronkowski not too long ago. Well, I guess it was a few years ago now. And he was rather expensive, but when we were paying it, we didn't have really any issues with it. We didn't charge a cover. We probably broke even compared to the previous Saturday that we're doing, but people still talk about that event and the branding that comes with it. There's a lot of value. There.
So do you think that the success of the football program over these last couple of years has also led to the success of Gentle Ben's? I do think of it as a game day stop for sure for myself and my friends, and we get done with the double-decker bus and Paige and the crew mm-hmm. over there, right? It's certainly a fun stop off to hit Ben's. Does the success of the football team translate into success of the restaurant?
100%. And so comparison, last year, beginning of the season, there wasn't a lot of hype. Towards the end of the season, there was a lot of hype in football. But in the beginning, we had just come off of a 3-win season. And, you know, people still came out, but we saw a 20% increase from this Labor Day game compared to last year. And so I think that's a direct reflection on the program and how good they were.
And that's an amazing sort of barometer of success to show the ripple effect of a successful football or basketball team and about how that trickles down into the economy. As we think about the collectives and the various ways of how House versus NCAA is going to change our relationships pretty much forever with student athletes, like how we as a community need to support the university, because those sort of successes that they have on the field or on the courts can translate into the kitchen, into the bar, into not just the operators, but all of the employees' pockets mm-hmm. as well too, to be successful.
Yeah. And then that goes into recruitment for new students at the U of A as well. And so when the U of A is growing and has more students, it's good for the local economy and definitely for us on university.
Without a doubt. Well, university is certainly a challenging location indeed, right? You've got some pretty major ups and downs with the wintertime highs and summertime lows, probably even a little more extreme than some of the more midtown locations where I'm operating at. And when we come back after the break, I want to break some of those down with you. The challenges of being on university, the parking, the employees, the college students, like how all that works, because that is fascinating and terrifying. to me as an operator. And so I'm hoping that that will also be fascinating to our listenership as well too. So when we come back after the break, we're going to break down a whole nother segment over here with Rich Pfeiffer, owner of Gentle Ben's Brewing Company, the Bassio Italian Agave House. We're going to talk about all the new restaurants he's opened up, any sort of future plans. Don't go anywhere. Coming back with another couple segments with Rich Pfeiffer after the break on Jump in Tucson. We are also pretty good at drinking beer over here on Jump in Tucson. Welcome back. I'm your host, Grant Kruger, and we are live in studio with Rich Pfeiffer, owner of Gentle Ben's, Bassio, and Agave House. Welcome back, Rich.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hey, so before the break, we were talking about some of the challenges of operating on University, one of the more peaky and valley-like locations in all of Tucson, right? Wintertime highs, but gosh, there's got to be some summertime lows as well, too. Can you share with our listeners a few of those challenges?
Absolutely. This summer was the first summer that we had what I would consider our normal summer. The summers before had lingering of COVID in a positive way. But this summer, U of A is not doing summertime orientations in person anymore. And so that used to be a big part of our business, and all the students are gone. And so the amount of business we're doing, we do more business in the week before school starts than we do in the entire month of July.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And so that comes with its own challenges, right? We go from 50 employees to more or less 200 employees between the three restaurants, and staffing, hiring, training, being fair to employees, all those things come with their own challenges.
How do you start up like that? Like, you know, from zero to 100, as we learned during COVID, right? For our listeners out there, Rich and I cried on each other's shoulders on more than one occasion, I think, over here. For COVID, with the government open, now you're closed, now you're open, now you're 50% occupancy. Not understanding that businesses can't just be turned on and off with a light switch, where we've got staff members who need to be trained, right? And understand what they're doing. I expect my server to know exactly what the well liquors are, but also be able to order this gluten-free for me, but also be a certified dietitian with malpractice insurance. And these characteristics just can't come from 2 days on the job.
Yeah. So we keep our cooks and managers employed year-round, no matter what. Like, that's just a sunk cost. And good for the people. For our server staff and some of the other front of house, we hire students intentionally. So being next to U of A has its pluses and minuses, right? Hiring students with not a lot of experience has its benefits and its drawbacks. One of the benefits is they leave in the summertime too. And so we hire young. You know, if someone comes and applies to be a server as a senior, we tend to not bring them on board, training them and having them stick around for 6 months and then leave. And we have to start the process over again. Just from a financial standpoint, doesn't make sense, but also from a business standpoint and trying to foster a family relationship within the staff, and a culture of positivity doesn't work if people are coming and going all the time. So we have requirements if someone works for us that, you know, you have to work through May graduation. You're allowed to leave for the summertime, but you have to come back on August 1st. And most of the time it works out pretty well.
It's certainly a challenge, though, indeed, like to have those big peaks and valleys like that. I've always been mystified by, you know, the Sam Hughes championship dining type business model where you just have a slow day, a slow day, a slow day, and then bam, it's game day. Here's $75,000 in sales and everyone's on top of you. Very difficult to execute. Mm-hmm. I mean, you must have some really big nights over there at General Ben's.
We do. And I think being that busy for the tipped employees, that's the motivation. Right. It's long days, it's grueling days, but it's also a lot of fun. There's so much energy in the air, and you're working side by side with some of your best friends, some people that you'll carry on to have relationships with for the rest of your life. And so I think that helps carry us through those big weekends.
Having been a tipped employee yourself, and without dropping any specific names over here, what kind of compensation are you seeing like in your tipped employees? Like, what sort of hourly wages are they making right now?
Servers, tips alone are probably averaging 25 to 30, and bartenders a little bit more than that, and late night bartenders a significant amount more than that.
And so, and that's on top of the $11.35 an hour salary. So essentially,
correct,
$40 to $50 an hour overall compensation,
correct,
in the tip model, which echoes what I was saying on Wake Up Tucson with Chris in a previous segment as well too, that this level of server compensation is actually quite high, and it's kind of something we don't ever talk about in the restaurant business, right? Our culture doesn't want to talk about tips, right? I don't want my servers talking about tips to each other. lest it create jealousy or animosity. And God forbid you talk about tips on the expo line so that the kitchen employee hears you complaining about only making $41 an hour, right? It's like, that is not a positive work environment you want to have. So we never talk about it. Yeah. And I think that's how we've gotten to where we've gotten with all these various acts, this, and where we're at with this Tipped Worker Protection Act, this Proposition 138 coming up as well too, that most of the world just truthfully doesn't know, Rich. Mm. Like, they literally think they're saving the servers by that somehow these servers are working for sub-minimum wage.
If anything, I definitely think it would hurt the servers. It hurt everybody in the restaurant industry.
Without a doubt. So you've had some big nights at Gentle Bend. You bought it 2017. How'd you end up with a couple more restaurants over here? Like, where does that jump go from, hey, I've got a successful brew pub to, you know what I should do is own this entire block over here?
Yeah, it was... It was in 2022 when the Dutch was leaving. So they're leaving university and moving to the east side. Unfortunately, they're not in that location anymore. But it kind of just sparked an interest. University was missing something, and the Marshall Foundation was looking for a Mexican restaurant to move into that space. And so at first we weren't interested, and the more and more we talked about it, the more excited we got about it. And when we jumped on board, and to open up Agave House, we signed a lease. But you can imagine, if you can picture where Gentle Bend's and Agave House are, we're walking back and forth on university, passing by Abaccio and checking out the patio and seeing how beautiful it is. And then we create a relationship with Andrew, the previous owner. And through that, he, you know, expressed that he wanted to be done with restaurants. And so before executing anything with Agave House, before the construction, we ended up purchasing Baccio and taking over that and having a lot of fun, bringing in some new people, a new menu, and really falling in love with that space. The patio is my favorite part, and obviously the Gentle Bend's patio is huge and it's lively and it's fun, but the Baccio patio is a little bit more intimate and probably one of my favorite places to be. We're throwing a covered patio on, hopefully in the next couple of months. We've had some struggles with the city and getting permits approved, but I think we're past that process.
Struggles with the city and permits? I am shocked. This is breaking news over here on Jump in Tucson. You're listening to Rich Pfeiffer, owner of Gentle Bend's, Baccio Italian, and Agave House on Jump in Tucson. This week on Jump In, we've got Tom Moulton coming up on Thursday from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. We've got Dr. Ed Ackerley following up on Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., always bringing us cool stories from the university. And again, live from University Boulevard, the owner of three fantastic restaurants down there, Mr. Rich Pfeiffer. So Rich, you had mentioned the Marshall Foundation. Can you break down for listeners what a short version of what the Marshall Foundation is as a landlord down on University?
They own the majority of the property on University and a little bit down on Park as well. They do a lot to help and bring people down to the street, keep it clean and pretty and beautiful. And then a portion of the rents actually go back to the community. The Marshall Foundation is a nonprofit, and their focus is on education and scholarships, K through 12, as well as scholarships to the U of A. And so all of the rent proceeds from all three of our restaurants, as well as others on University, go back into the community.
My understanding is most of the properties on University are Marshall Foundation properties, with the exception of the Illegal Pete's, Frog and Firkin, No Anchovies. Is that correct?
For the most part, yeah.
And so those ones have had some pretty significant remodels over the years to sort of perhaps compete with you at Gentle Bend's, right? We saw the No Anchovies massive remodel. And of course, when Landmark turned into Illegal Pete's, that was a pretty massive reinvestment. And Frog and Firkin was sort of third on that one. Can you talk about the competition from across the street and how you differentiate yourself?
Yeah, in that same time frame, we had all of the high-rises that were built behind us. And so the high-rises started, I think, in opening in 2018, 2017, maybe, if that seems right. And so it's brought a lot of traffic onto University, especially the students that would have maybe lived in housing further away from the street. I think it's important to stay relevant, and I think they all would agree with that. And you don't want to stay stagnant. You want to make sure that you're adding something new and exciting every semester, every school year, as the college kids are coming back.
No, without a doubt. And there's been a significant rebirth of university. When I was a college student, and this is dating ourselves back here a few moons ago, but Fourth Avenue was a pretty happening place. And now it seems to me that both university and downtown have sort of bypassed Fourth Avenue, even though the modern streetcar that runs between those three properties almost carries people between university and downtown more than just university and Fourth Avenue. Would you agree?
So nightlife is funny, and we mentioned this earlier, is it's very cyclical and changes year to year. And so that cycle changed towards the end of last year where it became university and Fourth Avenue for the college students instead of making the way all the way downtown. College students still go downtown, but for the if you're looking for a place that's heavily influenced by the college scene, it's going to be university or Fourth Avenue.
Without a doubt. And so that do you think that streetcar is a benefit for you then? Like, does that help or hurt?
For the nightlife scene, it definitely hurts. It takes more people away from us to Fourth Avenue and downtown than it does bring people back down to university.
Interesting. I wouldn't have thought that. Mm-hmm. I would have thought that maybe just being part of that stop, like right in front of General Ben's, mm-hmm. would have been a benefit. I've kind of banged on that modern streetcar multiple times here on Jump in Tucson for both the damage it did to downtown and its just overall cost in that cost-benefit analysis. This could have been 10 electric buses to replace this and probably would have saved, you know, the community an extra $100 million or so. Well, we've got one more segment with Rich coming up after the break. We're going to talk all things university restaurants over here. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger and Rich Pfeiffer on Jump In Tucson. Welcome back to Jump In Tucson. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. We are live in studio with one more segment with Rich Pfeiffer, owner of Gentle Ben's, Basio, and Agave House. And we've been talking all things restaurants on University Boulevard. Rich, you were telling us about how the Marshall Foundation owned a grand majority of the properties down there. There does seem to be a tremendous amount of turnover in some of those spaces. I think of the space that, and I don't have the address in front of me, but that housed the old Dubliner, for example. How many bars and restaurants has that been since you've owned Gentle Ben's?
I think it's probably been around five. And that location, it's on University, and I think everyone thinks anything on University gets guaranteed foot traffic. And it does, 9 months out of the year. But you really have to plan for the summers and the winters and plan for your highs and your lows because the summers are brutal. But beyond that, I think the locations that are further away from the university, like that location where the Dubliner used to be, or Mexicano Americano was, I think, the latest spot that was in there. But
I think it was called Union Jack or
Union
something
Jack,
like that
sorry.
Briefly as well, too. Yeah. They're hard to track. It's been a fair bit.
I think that one was there for a year, and Mexicano Americano was there for less than a year. And some space in between it as well. But the majority of people are coming up what I call the Tyndall Corridor between the Marriott and the Graduate, walking right by the General Ben's patio. And so if you're a visitor from out of town, you don't know university, usually you're going to stop at something that you see it looks like fun. And so I'm a little bit biased, but the General Ben's patio always looks like a lot of fun. And we get a lot of traffic in there. And then from there, if you don't go to Ben's, you're looking across the street at some options, or you're turning to the east and you're going towards Baccio, and then you stop at Baccio, or you know that you want to sit down at a Mexican restaurant and you're making your way over to Agave House. To make that turn, I think, all the way to the other side to walk down towards Euclid is hard and has to be a destination spot that people know they want to go to. And so I think that location is a little bit more difficult probably than the rest of university.
I've seen some struggles recently from Illegal Pete's, not just in Tucson, but if you saw the news last week, they announced they were closing their location in Tempe as well, too. This is a restaurant company that had a fair bit of growth in the southwestern United States, and it looks like they might be going a little bit backwards here, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it breaks my heart to see a restaurant close. I know what goes into it, both, you know, blood, sweat, and tears, and financially. And so I don't believe they were open for all that long in Tempe. They opened after the Tucson location. But what I've seen recently seems to be a lot of turnover in management. And I think trying to own and manage a location from far away comes with its own struggles. And for something as specific as university that has the highs and the lows and the specific culture and knowing and being in tune with what's going on, when you should have events, when you shouldn't have events, I think it's hard to read if you're not here.
Without a doubt. I mean, a warning to both absentee ownerships and perhaps even chains. It's one thing that we really love in Southern Arizona is our local restaurants. It's one of the things that's really kept me, you know, passionate about this industry for this long is that ultimately our guests much prefer locally owned places that don't have a one size fits all formula, right? You don't have to have a cocktail menu that works in Bangor, Maine, and also works in San Diego, but then also has to work in Tucson. You can custom tailor products to your constituency, to your guest needs up front. And I think you've been able to do that thus far with both a Mexican, Italian, and a new American restaurant, a feat that, as someone that's done it himself, not that easy to do.
And I think a lot of that is relationships as well. And so I have a great relationship with the management team and trying to make sure that they foster a great relationship with their team as well. And, you know, if people are just going to work just to pay the bills, they have a different mindset than if they're going to work and they're enjoying work and they enjoy the management that they work for. They enjoy the bosses that they work for. They really will do a little bit more for you than someone that's just there to collect a check.
Without a doubt. So can we talk about the parking challenges of university? Because I do know that, you know, back-end parking can be a challenge for certain customers, and there are hours that the garage was free, but maybe it's now not free. Like, where's the status of parking right now in university? How's that working?
We're always fighting the perception that there's no parking on university, and it can be challenging sometimes, but you can always park for free in the garage Monday through Friday after 5 o'clock with validation. The U of A just changed the policy to enforce charging in all of the garages on the weekends, which I'm grateful for the Marshall Foundation. They went to battle for us and worked out a validation system for the weekends. So the weekends are still free in the Tyndall garage with the validation. So you go to any merchant on university to include Baccio, General Benz, or Agave House, and ask for a parking validation, and that parking will be free.
And so you've got to ask your server or hostess, how does that work? Like, who am I talking to get that done?
Whoever is in front of you can make it happen. For the ease of it, if you're with a server, you can get it from the server.
Got it. Because I would just imagine that would be a perceived challenge for both guests, but also even for employees as well too, correct?
Yeah. The messaging is important, right? And so I'm glad that you brought it up and I could talk to your listeners about it. But, you know, there's signs on the doors, there's signs on the street, and it is a part of the spiel for the server to bring it up to the tables. So
you got any other future plans over here? You've jumped from one to three restaurants over just the last couple of years and in some exponential growth, quite frankly. Do you guys have your eyes on any other locations on university or otherwhere in or other places in Southern Arizona?
If I was smart, I would say no.
Right?
My partner's brother owns the building across the street that used to be Grand Central. And we do have aspirations to do something there. As of right now, no solid plans. We're finishing up the construction project over at Baccio that I mentioned, the porch. And then we expanded our kitchen over the summer, or finishing that up. And besides Grand Central, definitely slowing down.
So how many employees do you have right now with your...
With all three, we're just shy of 200 people.
That's amazing. 200 people, right? We get so excited on the news when we still talk about Caterpillar one decade later that they brought 600 jobs and this mythical American battery factory that may or may not occur. And I'm not knocking on those guys, but 1,000 jobs. And here we're sitting just two regular restaurateurs having a filthy pirate coffee together. And we've got 400 staff members plus between us right there. Like, that's an awful lot of jobs in Southern Arizona. And an industry I think is forgotten about with job growth and how that translates. And as you were discussing too, Rich, not all these are minimum wage jobs either. There's some folks making some pretty decent living with that.
Yeah, everybody in our kitchen, if they've been with us for more than 6 months, I say is over 20, 22 an hour. And so, you know, it's important to pay good wages and make sure that, you know, you keep people around for a long time.
Without a doubt. I mean, this is a business that can't be done without our people, right? The foundation is your crew over there. And I salute you guys for growing, not just on university, but during COVID too, a very, very difficult time for restaurants to move forward and move ahead for both staffing and for just getting input product in as well too.
Yeah, COVID was a time that financially was really good for us because the U of A brought all the students back and didn't let them do anything. But it was also a miserable time, you know, fighting with the students on how to behave and not to interact with people and not to get up from tables and all the fun that you were dealing with as well.
Yes. Well, you know what? Fun is coming back though for us, I think, in the restaurant world. This weekend, we got a lot of fun coming up. There is a 7 o'clock home football game against the Northern Arizona Lumberjacks at 7 o'clock. That game is going to be on ESPN Plus. For those of you that don't have the internet, you can come check it out live over at Gentle Ben's. Probably a great crowd down there, I'd imagine, this Saturday for our second home game in a row. A little busier time for you guys probably than us, huh?
Absolutely. You know, we get all the people from Tucson coming around, as well as the students, and it's family friendly and just so much energy in the air. A lot of fun.
So where do folks find you? We've got 1 minute left over here, Rich.
You can find us at gentlebens.com, bacciotucson.com, and agavetucson.com.
Amazing. Rich Pfeiffer, owner of Bacio Italian, Agave House, Gentle Ben's Brewing. Lots of fun stuff happening over on University. Do get out there and check out those amazing locally owned restaurants. Anytime you're going down to the University, having a great time down there to enjoy our Arizona Wildcats, think of these locally owned restaurants. Arizona or Sonoran Restaurant Week starting this week as well too, September 6th to the 15th. So go out there and buy local. It's been an absolute pleasure getting to spend this Wednesday morning with you, Tucson. Thank you again, Rich, for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you, listeners. Don't go anywhere. Dennis Prager coming up after the break. This has been an amazing hour, and Jump In Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk.